Welcome to Biohackers Lab, a place where we talk to smart people who are figuring out how to improve health in interesting ways. Join us to discover how you can biohack your life, your body, starting today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Biohackers Lab. I'm your host, Gary Kerwin, and on today's show, I've got Emily Maguire. And the reason I've got Emily on is because she is an expert in the low-carb, high-fat diet, and we're particularly going to be looking at ladies on the low-carb, high-fat diet today. But just to give you a little bit of background about Emily, she has a degree in nutrition and a master's degree in obesity science and management. And her master's degree had a focus on the effects of the low-carb diet in the management of type 2 diabetes. She's also an international speaker at different events around the world on the low-carb, high-fat diet. And her goal is to hopefully one day get to kickstart her PhD in the ketogenic diet and nutrition, and also how that relates to cancer treatment. So she definitely has a lot of focus on the world of low carb and ketones too, and in our diet. So I just want to say thanks, Emily, for coming on the show today.
No, thank you, Gary, for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. So just want to maybe educate people a little bit first, because you're in Scotland in the UK and you're a nutritionist. And I just want to make maybe help people understand, is a nutritionist a dietitian?
So it is slightly different. So we go through very similar training to dietitians. So we do 4 years at university, similar to dietitians. But in the UK, what's slightly different is a nutritionist is a bit more trained to do public health and preventative form of medicine, whereas dietetics is a lot more the clinical, so within the NHS setting. And the reason I differentiate or say that it's similar in terms of the teaching is that unfortunately, there is a lot of different nutrition courses and things out there. So we see a lot of people calling themselves nutrition coaches, etc., but they don't go as through as rigorous training as what registered nutritionists and registered dietitians do in the UK. But that is the difference between us. So one's more preventive and one is a lot more treatment based.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I mentioned to you when we had our little chat before the show, but you've been one of my low carb, high fat diet experts for a long time, because I first came across you back in 2015 when you were at the first ever low carb convention in Cape Town, South Africa.
Yeah, such a long time ago, it feels like now.
Yeah, and I see you've actually got the book with Karen Thompson in the background.
I do. So I actually did all the nutrition, the meal plans and the recipes for the book with Karen. So we rewrote the international book together, and yeah, she's phenomenal. So
oh, fantastic. Well, I'll link to that book in the show notes for people too, so they can get it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, Emily, I want to start off then, because you are my low-carb, high-fat expert today. And I saw on your website that there's a difference between a sugar-free diet, a low-carb diet, and a keto diet. Could you just explain the differences there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the reason that I did that on my website as well, and I think we'll probably get into a little bit more on this topic because I know we spoke a little bit on the background, but a lot of people, when they come to a low-carb diet, there's a lot of common misconceptions. So if you're someone brand new to this, what I often found, even when I got into it over 8 years ago, is that people often thought low-carb was just about, you know, as much meat as possible with a chunk of butter on top of a steak. You know, you picture that in your mind and you think maybe Atkins. There's so many misconceptions with it. And then when you actually get into understanding what a low carb diet is, you then see that actually for you, there could be different points in terms of carbohydrate level that is right for you. So I'm a huge proponent in that, find and use a kind of a low carb diet as a template and then build on it and make it work for the individual, not kind of the other way around. So what I've kind of seen with, I've worked with people over, as I said, the past 8 years, is that there's different kind of sort of like sweet points with the carbohydrate intake. So I detail it. So the first one is kind of a sugar-free sort of approach. And that's where I coin a carbohydrate intake of about 80 to 120 grams per day. Now, if we try and put this into context, if we look at kind of what the recommended guidelines are for, you know, the Eat Well plate or the pyramid, I mean, they state that around about 50 to 60% of your total calories should come from that carbohydrates. That can often equate, and what a lot of people in sort of the Western society eat is roughly roughly around about even between about 300 and 400 grams. So you can see that between 80 to 120 is still technically quite low in comparison to what a lot of people say. But in the world of low carb, it's maybe that little bit higher than what a lot of people think that it could sit within. So that's the kind of sugar-free sort of way that I coin it. Then I coin sort of a low carbohydrate. It's around about a 50 to 80 gram intake. So again, you can see it's coming down slightly, but it's not getting into. And the third one that I coin is that of a ketogenic range. So this is where I think a lot of confusion comes from, is that when you follow low carb, you know, should it be keto? Should you be really low? What should the gram level be, for example? So a ketogenic, and we'll probably come on to it, but a ketogenic is what I coin as having 50 grams of carbohydrates or less per day. And this might be your next question, but it probably is, should everybody be following a ketogenic diet? I absolutely don't think that everybody should be following a ketogenic dietary approach. Mm-hmm. We can probably get into the different people that can follow the different levels. But what I found is a lot of people come to low carb and think, okay, it's all just about getting the carbs as low as possible, and that's what it's all about. And then that can be at the detriment to, you know, their health or the long term or athletic performance, or, you know, just make certain things, even trying to do it long term. You know, for a lot of people, and this is the other reason that I coined the kind of three different approaches, is because out with physiological reasons as to what diet would work better, there's psychological reasons that come into play as well. So I've worked with particularly females, again, with eating disorders, and ketogenic diet can actually just spark off old habits and old eating patterns that they had in the past. You know, so for them, it's not suitable. Other reasons, like even trying to fit it in socially, cultural reasons, for example, a lot of the, you know, the people have the negative sort of barrage against low carb is because they say you can't sustain it in the long term, because they say what happens when you come off it, you know, what happens in 3 months when you go back to the normal way of eating. And that in itself, you know, obviously when people come to this diet, this should be looked at as a lifestyle change. Now, in order to make that a lifestyle change, you have to be able to follow this for life. And the nature of it is, for a lot of people, a ketogenic, they just can't. They're not going to be able to sustain that forevermore. So you're setting yourself up to fail before you even really start with it.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, already you brought up some great points there, how it's a spectrum and it's easing your way in and why you want to do it, and that even potentially that if you go too keto, too low carb, you could end up sparking issues. So what other pitfalls would you say that you've commonly seen? So you've mentioned how particularly if there's any ladies with eating disorders, I'm guessing anorexia, bulimia, those kind of disorders, that it could spark off, that they go back into that mental state, is it? Because they end up with cravings or
it's a lot to do with the restrictiveness. So the, you know, obviously off, you know, so it's very much, it sparks off that mentality or the psychology behind really being restrictive. And for a lot of people, particularly with things like binge eating disorder or for bulimia or other aspects around that kind of spectrum with it, it can really, really trigger it, and it impacts it more, their thinking around food. You know, the theory is that doing something like ketogenic, obviously, you know, ketone bodies themselves are very satiated, and they obviously have impact on certain, you know, hormones that suppress appetite. And you think that, well, if you're not then eating and you're not feeling hungry, but people obviously with eating disorders, it's so much more than just what's going on physiologically. It's a lot to do with the psychology behind it. And I've definitely seen a couple of people that I've worked with specifically, there's a fine line between going very restrictive, and because when you do ketogenic as well, it's not just about lowering the carbs as much as possible. You know, it's very much about looking at all of the macronutrients. It's about making sure that you're getting really good nutrient quality as well, because obviously it is very restrictive and we can't get away from that. So it's a lot of these things that you've got to think about around food. And a lot of people I know sometimes counter argue that with me and say, well, you know, actually it can give you freedom from thinking about food. And in certain populations, yes. So I would say in populations, you know, sort of overweight and obese individuals, it can work amazingly. But for individuals at the other end, you know, it's and where they have this issue with perhaps like body dysmorphia and things as well. So thinking that, you know, they actually are at a healthy you know, body weight, but they see keto and they think maybe I can lose more. And so it does just spark a lot of issues, you know, and old patterns, particularly if they've managed to go into remission with their eating disorders as well.
So I think that's another point then that people might not think of. If, you know, some people do have openly said if they have a disorder, eating disorder, but I guess there's a lot of people who don't say anything. And those people, they don't have to say anything, but this is a reason why someone like a nutritional coach like you would be a good reason just to help them and guide them. And maybe the topic comes up, but at least then they can know they're going to take care of themselves and not trigger that part of them.
And trigger that off. Absolutely.
That's a good point. So when we were talking about carb intake, this has always been an interesting one for me. Is like, how does a normal human being actually know what 50 grams or 100 grams of carbs is in a day?
Yeah, I know. It starts to get you think, what the heck?
Yeah. So
if we put it into some kind of context, I mean, I often say, so if you take a slice of bread, for example, I mean, your average slice of bread is about 50 to 20 grams of carbs. So quite often I say that to people and they think, I'm never going to be able to eat 50 grams then if that's all, you know, I'm allowed. But if you come to a low carbohydrate diet or, you know, any of the spectrum that you're following, you're brand new to this, what I always say to people is the first two major rules are cutting out refined sugar and refined grain. So, you know, that's obviously things like table sugar and fruit juices and jams and white bread and pasta, etc. You take all that out of your diet, you're kind of taking away the main bulk of the kind of carbohydrate content, if you like. So it makes it a little bit easier to try and figure it out. You then look at other sources. So a lot of people think that carbs are just in breads and pastas and sugar, etc. But obviously we get a lot of carbohydrate sources from fruits and vegetables and dairy, for example, and nuts as well. So if we look at it for fruit, so I often try and give it so a low sugar fruit, for example, is strawberries, berries, you know, any of the kind of berry options. And generally about a handful is about 5 grams of carbohydrates within there. If you look at non-starchy vegetables, so that's things like leafy greens like spinach, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, mushrooms, again, about sort of a good 2 cups of those generally will give you around about sort of 5 grams as well. And then you can start to try and build upon it, you know, from there. If you look at dairy, for example, again, if you're looking at things like milk, that obviously has a lot of milk sugar in there containing lactose. So about 250 mils has about 10 grams of carbs. So you can start to see where it builds in within your day. But what I always recommend people if they're first starting out is to really use a form of online tracker. So even something free like MyFitnessPal, for example, just to start getting their head a little bit more around where carbohydrate sources are coming from, because a lot of people just don't expect where it should be kind of coming from. And even in the realm of things like fruits and vegetables, there are different carbohydrate sources. So when I talk about the sugar-free, you know, part on the spectrum compared to the ketogenic, so those on the sugar-free can have more things like sweet potato or, you know, parsnip, the kind of more tuber, the kind of more starchy based of the vegetables. And the same, they can have a little bit more in the way of fruit because there is a lot more carbohydrate contained within them. Whereas if you're ketogenic, then those foods pretty much need to be completely eliminated, as you know. So it's just the low sugar fruits and the non-starchy veg within there as well. But tracking really, really does help, and putting that into something like MyFitnessPal just to get a bit of an idea. Again, I always say to people as well is try not get too obsessive with the tracking. This actually comes back to what I've seen with the eating disorder behavior as well, is the tracking with keto, because you have to be very, very specific and know what you're eating. That is what can often trigger off old and even not even just people with eating disorders, but a lot of females have gone through lots of different diets. You know, there are lots of different yo-yo, and you can get very entrenched and very kind of, you know, if you think if you go out with it, then it's very detrimental to you. And it, again, can spark off a lot of disordered eating within there. So definitely I would say for tracking, to get a handle on what carbohydrate sources and where they're coming from.
Yeah, I guess that it's, in, as you said, initially is the education of where carbs are coming from and understanding. So it's, even what you might think is healthy is actually loaded with carbohydrates, well, and even just ones that are going to create an insulin spike or a, you know, abnormal glucose levels in your body. And fruit is a classic one, thinking, oh, I have a big, you know, glass of fruit juice, thinking I'm healthy in the morning, but If you were able to do some blood testing, you'd see, oh dear, no, that wasn't so good.
Yeah, fruit juice. Yeah. That's always my killer.
Yeah. So when you were just a side question there. So sweet potato versus white potato, and sweet potato is okay?
Yes, I do like sweet potato. So just in terms of the glycemic kind of response of a sweet potato, it does appear to be not as bad in terms of blood sugar spiking or insulin response. Now, that's not true for everyone, of course. And so then I don't know if this might come on to it, but with regards to the sugar-free spectrum of the diet. So if you're someone that's a lot more insulin sensitive, so that's for people who, say, for example, they do a lot of exercise, they're already quite lean, you know, they don't have a lot of weight around the middle. That means that their body can actually process carbs a little bit differently to people who are insulin resistant. Now, insulin resistant is those individuals who have issues, obviously, with processing insulin. And generally, that's a lot of people who are mostly overweight and obese, but often carry the weight around their middle as well. So sweet potato versus white potato, I just prefer in terms of nutrient content as well. I think you get a lot more from the sweet potato. And like I said, the glycemic response of it as well can also be downplayed. That being said, I have had a lot of people who have experimented with white potato as well. And as long as they team it up with a little bit of, you know, fats and protein. So again, you're really downplaying the glycemic response. And the glycemic response, just to kind of explain it, is just the basically how quickly your blood sugar level rises in comparison to carbohydrate food. So I'm much more of a fan of the sweet potato angle, and I do get people to have more of that in comparison to the white potato.
Because I do see a few more restaurants, particularly in the UK, now offering sweet potato fries.
Yeah,
I found that interesting.
I've seen a lot more of it, and I think, oh, this is probably not another one of those foods that's taken, you know, and it's going to take hold a little bit and kind of run away with it. I mean, we still need to put it in context. It's still a potato. It's still a carbohydrate source. It's, you know, so, but I just think as an option for a lot of people, is quite a good one.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, particularly in the UK, people love potatoes. So it's one of those already. That's one of those emotional foods. Thinking, are you saying I can't eat my potato?
And absolutely, yes, with their Sunday roast.
Yeah, exactly. And then I saw an interesting tweet from Dr. David Unwin, a GP in the UK, and he was talking about rice and glycemic index. I don't know if you also have you did that people might actually eat too much rice when they're going low carb too.
Yes, I have seen that. So a lot of people, I think it's because a lot of people think sort of white potato and white rice, because it's not the containing gluten or wheat, you know, it's kind of just a pure carbohydrate source. So a lot of people do kind of eat a little bit more of that, particularly if they maybe confuse sort of low carb and paleo as well. So if you start getting into different spectrums of the arm with it all. But rice is essentially just, you know, a carbohydrate source as well. And again, coming back to, if you're someone that is insulin resistant, you know, has type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, then you are going to have to pull back on the rice as well, unfortunately.
And I like your tip about, even if you don't have access to blood tests, that just looking at your body and saying, if you see you carry a lot of weight around your stomach, that, yeah, potentially you've got an issue there.
Okay. Yeah. If you're predisposed to kind of that apple shape, then you probably are more disposed to insulin resistance.
Okay. So that brings us on now. We've talked already a little bit about ladies, and I want to go deeper into that situation, because I see it all the time, how a lot of women in the Facebook groups or, you know, different forums, that when they do eat a more low carb diet or keto diet, that issues can crop up. And even in my situation with myself and my wife, like, I responded very differently on a very low carb diet to how she responded. And it's just one of those enigmas, it seems, out there. And I'd love for you to maybe delve deeper into that situation any particular situations or physiological differences between men and women who go low carb.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, obviously, men and women, no matter what way we look at it, are just very different in every realm.
Yeah.
But absolutely. And I've seen it quite often. It's quite, you know, I've had couples come to me and we start them maybe both off on really low carb, and the guy does really well, loses a lot of weight, is thriving, energy, etc. And the woman is just not losing weight. She is grumpy. She is, you know, just not functioning, really, really low kind of mood, just no energy. And there's lots of different things. And again, what I would say is that's not true for every female as well. So we have obviously a lot of females who do sort of particularly keto and thrive and function quite predominantly with it. But when we look at it, they obviously are very different. And men, you know, for example, they obviously have a lot more lean muscle mass. So therefore, in terms of losing weight, it's a lot easier for them. Females, a lot of it obviously comes down to things like hormones, you know, hormones, particularly thyroid function as well. So I've worked with a lot of women over the years who they already have pre-existing thyroid problems. And generally that's underactive thyroid, so hypothyroidism. And those individuals, one of the impacts it has with it is weight gain and obviously a very difficult ability to lose weight as well. Now, there's a lot of I find a lot of women, particularly with autoimmune issues like hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, etc., you either do really well on low carb or you do really poorly on low carb. And sometimes it's not until you kind of try it that we can kind of see what's happening. And for some people, if you already have pre-existing, say, thyroid conditions, for example, doing low carb just seems to make that 10 times worse. It can really lower the thyroid function even more. Again, there's a lot of theories. It's because a lot of the hormones that are involved within there, you're actually just kind of downregulating, downplaying them a lot more as well. So a lot of that I see with it, because a lot of females often come to me and say things like they feel really cold when they start, you know, going really low carb or like and stay consistently with that again. So that would all be a sign that things like thyroid function is being impacted within that. Other things that I see, so again, when it comes to female hormones, so for some females, it can actually work amazingly to help promote, obviously. I've known a lot of females who come to a low carbohydrate approach, particularly for fertility. So particularly those individuals, it comes back to if they are predisposed to a lot of insulin resistance. So there's a condition which is known as PCOS. So that's polycystic ovary syndrome. And that is where there is cysts which are basically grown on the ovary, which can impact fertility. It can cause things like weight gain or kind of facial hair growth, etc. And that's because the impact that it's having on the hormones. So it's downplaying a lot of the female hormones whilst upregulating a lot of the male hormones as well. And the direct impact that it has is also with regards to insulin. So we keep coming back to this aspect of insulin. So what is the thing that we can obviously drive down insulin is that of a low carbohydrate diet. And I always remember actually listening to a presentation from Jackie Bernstein, who is Dr. Atkins' nurse.
Okay.
And she was talking about a study that they did, and it was looking at low carb and PCOS. And they actually had, I can't remember how many females they had within the study, but they ended up having, once they took participants on, had to end up giving a disclaimer and saying that, you know, if you're not on birth control before starting the diet, you have to, because halfway through the study, a couple of participants actually ended up pregnant, and they've been told you'll never ever be able to conceive, you know, because your issue with PCOS is so severe. And then when they started the low carbohydrate diet, they actually were able to reverse, they were able to improve a lot of their hormone levels, and because they got that insulin level down. So for a lot of females who are having issues, particularly with hormones, it can definitely help with that aspect with it. But again, and what I often find is it's sometimes females as well that are very, you know, very insulin sensitive. They don't have an issue with their weight. If anything, they are probably maybe even slightly underweight as well. Because with female hormones are actually very, very tightly regulated with regards to our fat mass. And this is why when people with, on the really extreme end with things like bulimia or anorexia, this is why menstruation for them can stop, because obviously their fat mass is pretty much non-existent. This is why things like female bodybuilders, because their body fat percentage is so low, then their body can't produce the hormones properly. So again, what often that I see is that people, if they come to a low carbohydrate approach, if they lose a lot of weight really quickly, then that can have huge impacts with regards to menstruation cycles as well. So I've seen a lot of females where it can actually stop their periods, for example, for a good couple of months. And what we have to do is try and balance out what their intake is. So for coming back to it, what I find with a lot of females is that for them, keto might not be the optimal because it's too low, it's too drastic, and it's too quick for their body. So we then would either put them on just a bit of a more moderate carbohydrates, low carbohydrate approach, or kind of sugar-free approach, and then even titrate down. Because the other thing that I find with females in comparison to males, and I might, people might actually say, no, it's not the case, it's very similar to them, maybe I just work with a lot more females, but the craving aspect as well seems to be a little bit more heightened in females. So we work with a lot of sugar-free. Myself and Karen Thompson have done a lot of online courses, and the cravings that come up for females is just really significant, particularly in that first 2 weeks. And I mean, they are, you know, really severe, to the point where you think, I can't keep doing this. They are, you know, I'm actually going to fall out with so many people around me because I'm being so grumpy and just want that sugar kind of fix with it. The exact reasoning, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, again, I've had a lot of females who say, you know, around about the time of month for them, it's a lot harder to do low carb and stick with it because of the natural cravings that then come around that point of time. So it's about trying to find strategies to kind of help with that, and make sure that we kind of guide with it and get them through it as well. So, but like I said, on the flip side, there are a lot of females who do benefit really well from going low carb. And unfortunately, it's one of those things that until you try it, we don't actually know how the body is going to respond.
Yeah. So I think it's like most things in this world where you might be told something, but just understand that every human is their own physiology. We've all got our own history, so no one knows exactly like your hormone levels, how you respond to certain things, and I guess particularly ladies too, it just might even be slightly more heightened because of the hormone aspect. I'm glad you mentioned the fertility part, because a lot of people always just think weight loss, weight management. But I was also really interested in that. I came across it years ago where if you're in a very fertile state, it actually is a sign that you're very healthy. So because you've got good hormone regulation and your body's functioning well. So it's good to hear that. Yeah, if people are struggling, and I know particularly PCOS is always mentioned by gynecologists as a reason why a lady is not falling pregnant, or, you know, endometriosis and other issues like that. But it's amazing how a diet can improve, you know, gynecological function.
I know. And just to kind of put on to that, I think as well, it's because so many females think low fat is the best way to lose weight. So many females that I know, you know, particularly even in my personal life, they all go low fat and they think that's the best way for it. But again, the fat that you eat is directly impacting the hormones within your body. And therefore, if you're not getting enough good quality, healthy fats within you, your body's just not going to be able to produce the hormones that it needs to in order, you know, with regards to fertility. And I think just coming back to as well with women is that so many women as well have done so many cyclings of diets, you know, over the years, that their metabolism is a lot more impacted with regards to males. And that's another thing that we often see when people start low carb, is that they come, but because their metabolic rate, for example, is probably just way, way lower than really where it could be, and then they come to low carb and then they just think they can eat a bunch of calories and they can just eat all this fat and they can just have all this added in, it doesn't work for them, because their metabolic rate is so impacted. You actually need to take a look at the overall calorie content just as much as the quality as well. So it's probably another major issue that a lot of females are experiencing.
Yeah, and as you mentioned with the yo-yo diets, I can imagine how so many people have actually gone through starvation diets to try diet, and then they go through back to spikes, and they've played with their physiology so much before they even get to you, the low carb eating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the time they've lost a lot of fat and muscle mass when they do those approaches, and then they regain it all back as fat. So again, you're just completely impacting your metabolic rate with that.
Yeah. So for ladies, I guess you've mentioned a couple of the key points that there's some who actually start gaining weight when they go low carb too. Yeah. And yeah. I know that I've seen that all the time, and that frustration thinking, but hang on, I'm trying to eat less of these things that are meant to put on weight, but I'm actually putting on weight. And do you think that's more water weight that they're putting on, or is it, do you think, extra more fat deposition?
It probably could be a combination of both, depending on how long they've been doing it for. I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of people who've started this way, predominantly females. And as you said, they've started to gain and gain and gain. And that's because, I mean, I had one woman in particular who was eating in excess of about 3,000 calories for a day. Now, when we calculated what she should actually be eating, it was about half of that. You know, and she, you know, there was no exercising and she did have a lot of weight to lose. But it's because, and again, it's the misconceptions that come with regards to a low carbohydrate diet. And it's this thinking that, well, just eat to satiation, you know, just eat until that moment that you feel full. But unfortunately for a lot of individuals, particularly overweight or obese individuals, their natural satiety signals are not, you know, they're not at play. So, and fat is very palatable. And I've just been having conversations with a few people kind of behind the scenes as well, just kind of talking about how a lot of people think just ramping up the fat is exactly what's going to, you know, help with regards to weight loss. And I've seen it so many times again. And it's a fine line, because I think a lot of women, when they start this approach, they can often be quite scared of fat because they've come from a low fat or a calorie counting way. And they think, my gosh, that's so many points or so many sins or so many whatever it is, and lots of different approaches with it. So you have to educate them. First of all, you don't need to be scared of the fat, but then that can go on the flip side where they just then think, well, oh my gosh, I can have cream and butter and cheese and this is amazing. But there is a consequence with that as well. And if you're particularly looking at this approach for weight loss, the calories still do matter. And it's not to say that it's just calories in equals calories out, because the quality of the calories are really important. But I think this notion got a bit too simplistic and we just said, well, just eat what you want. As long as your carbs are at this level, do what you want. But that's really not the case either. So we've got to be really and try and get back to the main principles with it all.
I think that you raised such a good point there about how people need to realize that our sense of appetite is within our brain, and how that can be disturbed in different people. And so, yeah, some could just actually overeat unknowingly because they're just never satisfied. And that's also sort of linked into the mood changes that some people might feel, that they're not satisfying their body, and their neurology is looking for more. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
And this brings me on to another point of, and I'm glad to see you also brought it up, because I had a researcher who researches ketones, and she mentioned it to Brianna Stubbs, and how that high levels of ketones in our blood doesn't equal weight loss. And I think, so particularly ladies, again, thinking, no, I'm just going to take all these ketones or raise all my ketones and I'm good to go. But that's not the case.
Yeah, it's really not the case. And yeah, I just published a blog post on this, because the more and more that I'm seeing of it, the more that it's the wrong message altogether. So I'll gain a lot of people would say, oh, well, I'm not losing weight or I'm gaining weight. And I would see people saying to them, well, just increase the fats because that'll increase your ketone level. And obviously high ketones means that you're burning fat, which means you'll lose weight. It does not work like that at all. So essentially, yes, we are trying to obviously restrict your carbohydrates to a certain level so that your body will switch over to using fats or obviously ketones for energy. Now, if you're someone that's looking to lose weight, you want to be getting as much of that, you know, the fat kind of burning and the producing of the ketones from the body. You almost want it to be eating its own fat, in a sense, a way of putting it. If you then take in too much from the diet, so if you're having, like I said, in excess of 3,000 calories, you're putting butter in your coffee, you are lathing in, you know, cream everywhere, all your body is going to do is, yes, it's going to ramp up the ketones, but it's going to be using the fat from the diet and it's just going to be utilizing that. Therefore, there's no need for the body to tap into its body fat stores and burn it for energy and therefore expend it, therefore lose weight, therefore lose fat mass. And a lot of people, so if we look at the obesity research, for example, so we do know that if we compare low carb diets to low fat diets, that the low carb diet generally often does win out. And the belief is because ketosis or the ketone body definitely have a role to play within that. But the role is not because it's just causing more fat loss. There's lots of other things that the ketones are doing within the body. And one of the major things is causing a lack of appetite. So they're very satiating. There was one study that was released, I think it was European Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it actually showed that the ketone body level could suppress the hormone ghrelin. Now, ghrelin is our hunger stimulating. It's the one that makes our tummy rumble. It's the one that, you know, says to us we need to eat. And the ketone bodies appear to actually be able to suppress that. Whether or not you are hungry or, you know, or not, it can kind of actually downplay that. So what that naturally does is it naturally allows our body to feel full or to feel satiated or not to have that appetite. So what happens is our total calorie intake actually reduces. So if you look again at a lot of the studies and really look at the intake that those in the low carb arm are having in comparison to the low fat, generally actually they maybe are sometimes eating a little bit less. And I know this isn't something that a lot of people in this space want to hear, because it isn't about, and it's not just about the calories in equals calories out, because it is very much about the quality, because then the foods that you are eating, so it's really high in healthy fats, for example, which is impacting the hormones amazingly in the body, particularly for females. You're not in deprivation, you're not affecting metabolic rate. But the ketones themselves is not what's kind of this magical thing that's causing the weight loss. And I think I've seen it a lot more, because so many people got so fixated on, well, my ketones are this level, why am I not losing weight? You know, and I think a lot more so, and I think what you were saying is there's a lot more exogenous ketones that are coming out now. So, you know, ketone salts and ketone esters, which I actually think are going to be incredible, I think, for therapeutic reasons. And that's particularly where a lot of my interest is for the ketogenic diet. So neurological and cancer, I think, will work phenomenally, because for a lot of those, we do know that the higher the ketone level, it seems to correlate a little bit better with, you know, disease, downplaying disease progression. But that being said, even if we look at things like epilepsy, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, we look at the research that we have, not necessarily having really high ketone level even correlates with disease remission as well. It's not to say that you just ramp up the ketones and that's what causes, you know, you getting seizure free, or that's what causes improvement in cognition. Actually, if you just even have a mild ketosis level, so get above that 0.5, even up to about 1, we find that people can get improvements as well, as much as people who are hitting about the 4 or 6 level as well. So I think this notion of get your ketones as high as possible and then you'll have all these benefits and everything will be amazing, again, it's just another message that unfortunately has just been run away with online. And I think it's something we have to come back to and make sure that people don't think. Because again, if we, in terms of long term, we don't know what impact having chronically elevated levels of ketones to the extent of between 4 and 6 will have on an individual. We don't, you know, and I think naturally occurring, so getting in that kind of nutritional ketosis range, generally a lot of people seem to be fine, but we don't know what will happen in 2030 as well.
So
I think we definitely need to, sorry.
Yeah, no, the line cut just a tiny bit there, but I think exactly what you said, where maybe what's happened is the world is focused on ketones, but ketones is just one of the biomarkers. It doesn't, and exactly as you said, you don't want to, you might not want to stay in that 4 to 7 millimolar range all the time, because that's not the magical elixir there. It's something else is happening as ketones raise. And it could even be Brianna Stubbs, that researcher, she felt that we were talking about the difference in ATP production between glucose and ketones, and that it's that actually they are actually about the same. It's just that the ATP is more efficient from electron transport gradient on the ketone production than the glucose production. So there's definitely other things happening other than just high ketone levels in our body.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So do you think ladies should be in nutritional, I'm thinking nutritional ketosis here. Should you be in nutritional ketosis a lot of the time? Or I see a lot of people talk about cyclical nutritional ketosis. Is it something that a lot of humans should be in, or what do you think?
I think, if I look at it personally, I'm not in a ketogenic range all the time at all. I think that from what we know in terms of, if we look at even the anti-aging or, you know, anti-cancer kind of properties, then doing this kind of cyclic, so even being in keto some of the time, again, I wouldn't say that we know the sweet spot with that. So how many weeks out of the year, for example? I mean, if we look at the fasting research that shows, you know, particularly for the cancer benefits and aging benefits, like I was saying, they do say that roughly if you can do, you know, fasting for about 5 to 7 days, 1 week out of the year, then that is what is enough to kind of promote the, you know, the clearing out of the sort of the dead cells, for example. With regards to keto, I think cycling in and out, it really depends on what your goals are, I think, with it. And I think that if you're someone that's just looking for, you know, just kind of health, you are just looking for a little bit of vitality, just make sure that you are, you know, no inflammation in the body, making sure you're doing as much as possible to be preventative. So if you're someone that doesn't have any form of condition, then I would say actually just being quite low carb most of the time is actually perfectly okay. I don't necessarily see a reason to have to be in that ketogenic range. Because the other thing is that we've got is what happens when you kind of keep coming in and out of it. You know, we don't know kind of what that's also doing, you know, to the body. If you're someone so I've worked with endurance athletes as well, and it, obviously keto works really quite well for them, particularly on sort of long runs. And we find that the cyclic with that works super, super well. So that you know, a couple of days a week, they can go a little bit higher carb, but on their run days and their training days, they can obviously go back into that keto range. So again, it's all about training the body. So for those individuals who are really insulin sensitive, they find that that works really, really well. For those who are really insulin resistant, so for those who are, you know, diabetic, metabolic syndrome, cycling in and out just seems to make things a lot worse. It gets harder to get back in. It's just, so there's a lot more kind of at play with it. So like I said, if you're doing a lot more preventative, I would actually just say just general low carb is actually perfectly fine, particularly for females as well. I see a lot of the cyclic ketogenic works a lot better actually for men as well, on the flip side of that. Again, I'm not 100% sure why, but it's just kind of the observation that I've seen with it.
Yeah, and again, that I would completely agree, because I see it with me and my wife. It's I can move in between all the time and just manage my weight very easily. It's incredible for me, but for her it's different. And I know again, I've seen it from other ladies too. And have you had to work with any ladies who are doing high level sport and wanting to eat low carb? And as you were mentioning, because ladies who go into endurance or high level sport, that they start playing with their hormones naturally, then I can think of marathon runners. And how would you help someone like that?
So I actually, there's one lady in particular I've been working with quite a lot recently, and she is a long distance runner. So her biggest goal a few months ago, she was trying to do, let me get this right, I think it was about a 9-hour run. Incredible. I mean, I just totally take my hat off to her for that.
To run and for 9 hours?
9 hours. So okay. It's a long distance endurance run. So she actually came to me in November, and she is someone, she had done so much amazing research online. She had, you know, found all this, been starting low carb herself, but then she just, and this is often what I find with a lot of people I work with, is that they mix up a lot of different things. So she was doing a lot of intermittent fasting, she was going really low carb, she then actually lowered her protein really low as well. And this is another thing that's kind of in the world of all that's talking about this moderate protein aspect. So she really ran down her protein level. Everything was just kind of all over the place. She dealt with a lot of kind of food behavior issues as well. So in the past, she'd had a lot of things like food addiction. So there's a lot of things that were going on in play. So when she came to me, we kind of had to reset. We had to restart. We had to throw out everything essentially and start from the beginning. And her goal was obviously to do these long runs. So she was doing a lot of training as well. So we started off on quite low carb, and I started doing a lot of the cyclic. And when you do something like that with regards to endurance athletes, very much about the timing of the carbohydrates as well. So for example, at night she would have her evening meal, and I would get her to have a sweet potato if she was going to be having a run first thing in the morning, because then that carbohydrate would be enough to suffice her throughout the run. We then did things like, so I gave her recipes for things like banana pancakes, which again, a lot of people often go crazy at me, think you can't recommend banana, but for someone like that, and I'm not talking, you know, big bunches of it, I'm talking half a banana mixed with some butter and an egg before a run. So her carb content was roughly, I think we said it around about sort of the 80 grams, which is not the kind of classic what you think keto, but because her body was expending so much, she could actually get away with having a little bit in terms of higher carb content. Then on the race day, she actually did amazingly. And we kind of, I think there was a lot of more mental barriers to pushing to get her to the final kind of 9 hours, just obviously because it's a huge, huge kind of task with it. But we worked out, so during her runs, so we gave her targeted approaches. So things like even taking little sachets of nut butters around with her. We obviously, the things with something like that is you have to think of the practical applications as well. So what can you actually physically do? But yeah, it was all about the timing. And then, like I said, the other aspect that we looked at was things like the protein intakes. I got her to increase the protein intake. This is another thing, just to touch upon it, is that I find with females, particularly if they've come to the world of keto, they lower their protein levels so much because they think they have to be a moderate protein level. Now, for females, particularly of a certain age, particularly if you're peri or postmenopausal, and then if you're ramping down your protein level, as we age, we go through a natural process which is known as sarcopenia. Sarcopenia is naturally, you know, you're losing muscle mass. Now, there is a theory that ketogenic is a little bit more protective of muscle because of the leucine content within there, but still some females just lower their protein level so much that it's just detrimental to their muscle mass, which affects metabolic rate, which affects aging, which affects everything that's kind of going on there. So I got this one woman, particularly because of the amount of exercise she was doing, to increase her protein level as well. And we kept this cycling kind of going. So she did do a little bit in terms of higher carb. And then on race day, she was even quite surprised, I think, you know, the runs that she was achieving. And she started doing, you know, started off doing 2-hour runs, 3-hour runs, 4-hour runs. And what was really fascinating is not only could she get through it, but her recovery the next few days after, she wasn't in pain. She didn't have as much muscle soreness. She was really being able to just get back on with the rest of her training within the week. So it was really quite incredible to kind of see it actually as well. And we're back up gearing her again for her next kind of long distance run with it. And I think, so when I was saying about the exogenous kind of ketone, so for her, for example, I think that if we add in even just a little bit of, you know, more MCT, play around a little bit, then she could benefit really well with having that, you know, small amount of exogenous ketones for a short window while she does that run to boost her through it. So I do think there's a big place for it, but it has to be really targeted and you have to kind of know what you're doing with it as well as the other thing.
And again, this is why if you want to perform at a certain level, you need someone to help coach you on those little nuances and mix your N equals one physiology with the actual diet and how to do things.
So, absolutely.
So someone like that could get away with eating more calories, I guess, too, because something you would do for that lady too, where you she might end up naturally needing more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she can definitely naturally eat a little bit more. Mm. But yeah, so it's just about taking it all into context with it. Yeah.
So you brought such a good point because I wanted to actually do that. So when we talk about ladies, we're talking about all ages too. So you've got someone who could be a teenager who's trying to manage her weight, which is a different situation, to a lady going through 20 to 30s, to someone who's postmenopausal. And again, that's a whole other spectrum to deal with mm-hmm. when going into the low-carb, high-fat dietary mm-hmm. kind of world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge.
And you say and you say protein is probably one of the bigger things that ladies are not managing efficiently, maybe.
Yes, particularly it's more for people who come at it from the ketogenic angle. So again, it's a lot of these people thinking that ketogenic is all, and to a certain extent it is. So it is obviously low carb, high fat, and this kind of moderate protein, but this terminology, and I even asked someone this other day, I was like, well, what is moderate protein? Has anyone seen a guideline? Has anyone seen what that means and put it in context? And I know there's a lot of keto calculators and things online, but again, it's like, well, where have the values come from? Like, kind of, you know, because if we look at, you know, what protein is and what is needed in terms of human survival and what's known as nitrogen balance. So that balance is to make sure that your body has enough protein, that you're not going to be, you know, losing essential muscle mass, for example, and then obviously not having too much as well, which sometimes can be detrimental for the body. And that's generally set at about 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight that you need just to survive, just to kind of maintain. But I have seen, and I know there's a lot of probably researchers and doctors, and I can't remember where I saw it floating around, but I know someone was kind of recommending 0.6 grams per kilogram, and that's more looking at things like longevity, so lowering the protein level for that. But I've seen some females in particular, their protein level is around about 0.5 grams per kilogram of body weight. And that is just, I mean, the muscle loss that could even be happening, I mean, we don't know, we've not measured it. But again, not only directly impacting, you know, your metabolic rate, but things like bone health as well. So when you go through the menopause, there's a lot more risk for things like osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, because of what's happening with regard to the bone and again, the hormones. So therefore, if you're not getting enough protein in your diet, you could just be impacting that even further.
So you don't just take a calcium tablet.
You don't just take a calcium tablet, unfortunately. I wish there was a tablet for everything.
Yeah, but sorry, I see that all the time. I take loads of calcium for my bones. Like, oh, no.
It's not to say that I'm telling people to eat, you know, mountains of protein, but I think we've just got away from understanding, because in the world of ketogenic, there's different types of ketogenic diets as well. And, you know, if you're looking at for therapeutic reasons for things, particularly for epilepsy, so a classical ketogenic, which is known as a 4-to-1 or a 3-to-1 ratio. And what that means is that, so 4-to-1, so for every 5 grams of food that you're going to eat, 4 grams of that needs to be fat and 1 gram of that needs to be carbs plus protein. Now, that's really restrictive. That's generally about 90% of your calories is coming from fat and the rest from carbs and protein. People who don't need to follow a therapeutic diet for, you know, ketogenic for a therapeutic reason, don't need to be following that. And again, I was actually just talking to someone about this last night. If we look at the research, particularly in children, there's huge issues with regards to bone mineral absorption. There's growth problems when they're doing a classical ketogenic diet because the protein level is so low. So, you know, I think in this realm, again, we keep having this terminology of moderate protein, but what does it actually mean? And is it doing a lot more harm than good for a lot of people? Could they stand to have a little bit more protein? And it's because people are very scared of gluconeogenesis. So they're very scared thinking that if they eat too much protein, it's going to get turned to sugar. But, you know, so again, it's this concept that I think has just been run away a little bit.
And I think that's a good point, that's then because people are scared it's going to get turned to sugar and drop their ketone levels, that they're not going to lose the weight. But we've already discussed, don't just focus on high ketone levels thinking you're going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's loads of other physiological factors in play here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't think many people would even think of that, from protein for bone health and maintaining muscle mass when going low carb and just good hormone control, and how actually you could be eating, it's the protein part, not only lowering the carbs, which people focus on to get the high ketones, but are you getting enough protein in your body?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And like I said, it doesn't need to be, you know, huge amounts of meat covering the plate. I mean, just a standard, you know, one chicken breast, one piece of steak. But a lot of people are, you know, I even see people just having like a third of a piece of chicken breast, for example, is on their plate. And that's just, it's not enough.
Yeah. And then fat sources, what are your favorite fat sources for ladies then on the diet?
So my favorite, I try to get people to have a mix. So a mix between, if you can tolerate it. So I'm a huge fan of dairy. I actually do love dairy. So things like cheese and cream and butter. The caveat is obviously the quantity. So when I tell people what to have, I do put maximum limits for each day of how much they can have. But other sources, so things like avocado, olive oil, olives, coconut oil, ghee, nuts and seeds as well, they're all amazing different sources of fats. And it's best to try and get a mix of all the fats within your diet, because obviously they're offering different properties, and really just not be scared of the fats at all, because that's really, really what's nourishing your hormones, particularly for females.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was I can agree, because when I went low carb, high fat, it was the fat part that was the hardest part for me, because I always thought fat equaled cardiovascular death in my situation. It's drummed into you, and it's like, no, if I actually have this butter, I'm going to kill myself. And it's like, no, you got to get over that mental state first.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And so even there, I'm just thinking that I've seen it also when you talk about nuts, that some people could be thinking, oh, nuts are full of fat, and they just, but then they overindulge in the nuts because it's too much again there.
Yeah, I mean, two of the biggest, if you're someone who is gaining weight or, you know, not sure where their calories are coming from, things like dairy and nuts and chocolate and dark chocolate are the three things. And it's something I've actually noticed this week. So I've been doing a challenge. So one of my friends, the dietitian, she was running kind of a paleo challenge for a week. It's still very low carb, but it's no dairy. So I thought this is going to be easy and kind of a walk in the park for me. But it's no dairy, no chocolate. And I struggled so much with it because what it's allowed me to do is, you know, I not necessarily need to lose weight or anything like that, but it's let me see what my patterns of food has been like. And the amount of times I would just go to the fridge and just reach for a piece of cheese or just have a couple of squares of dark chocolate or just go for that handful of nuts. It's very easy to do. And because it's fat so palatable, you don't realize actually how much you're overeating. So those are the three things that people are really struggling with regards to trying to lose weight, or they're in a plateau or they're gaining weight. Look at things like your dairy, your nuts and your dark chocolate, particularly around snacking time as well, because they're very, very easy to increase your calorie content without you actually even realizing kind of that you're doing it.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, because you think, oh, I can just dump cream on everything and loads of cream, and then I see that easily. And then, what do you think about hydration levels? I know a lot of people who also go low carb from a mineral aspect. There's your magnesium and your sodium levels, but I've got a suspicion a lot of people dehydrate when they're on a low carb diet. They don't drink enough water. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm actually noticing this really quite significantly this week, is that I'm thirstier a lot more and I really, really need to increase the amount that I'm drinking over and above what I was doing. So particularly in the first couple of weeks of starting, even low carb, you know, keto as well. But if you're someone that came from eating a lot of carbs to a low carb way, your body's going to be dumping a lot of glycogen out of the body, and it dumps a lot. So when it stores glycogen, it stores it one part glycogen, three parts water, which means it's going to be flushing out a lot of fluid from you. Now that fluid needs to be replaced. And like you said, it can often cause problems with electrolyte imbalance as well. So things like magnesium and sodium, potassium, and those are the two that are closely regulated with regards to hydration status. So I definitely do think that a lot of people do actually need to drink and not be scared of that kind of feeling of thirst, because that is another sign that your body is kind of switching to sort of fat burning mode, if you like, as well. And on that, I have seen a lot of people who are now starting to take the exogenous salts, so the ketone salts, that they can actually become a little bit more dehydrated as well, purely because of the way that they're packaged. There's obviously the BHB, or the B-hydroxybutyrate, is packaged with regards to the sodium, sometimes chloride or sometimes magnesium as well. So it can cause a little bit more dehydration within the body. So I've definitely noticed it. And I think it's something I encourage people, is to make sure they keep up with their fluid intake, particularly in the first couple of weeks, because that's also what can make the keto flu a lot worse, is the dehydration and the imbalance of the electrolytes.
Okay, great point. Well, we're coming up to the hour mark here, and we've gone through a lot of information, and I mean, I could keep asking you more and more nutrition questions. But so as a resource now, Emily, so any ladies listening to this, if they can start the low carb, how would you suggest someone get started? Like, get the Sugar Free book, mm-hmm. is that a great example of giving some information?
Yes, the Sugar-Free book. If you're brand new to this, what I would say is always come back to those two rules. So cut out the refined sugar and cut out the refined grains. If you're not going to do anything else, make that your starting point. The Sugar-Free book, which I did all the meal plans and the nutrition and the recipes with Karen Thompson, is a really great place to start. Again, for females, because we take in a lot of the psychological aspects with regards to eating as well. And then from there, if you want to push it a little bit more, then even go down the spectrum, you know, titrate yourself down with regards to carbohydrate intake. Don't feel you need to jump 2 feet into keto. If you want to, then amazing, but just know that there's a huge difference between doing a ketogenic diet and doing a well-formulated ketogenic diet. And I think that's kind of where you kind of need to pick up on with that. Another really great book is by a dietitian friend of mine, Franziska Spritzler. She's got a low carb book that's all about for females as well. So I'm really big on pushing that one. So the Sugar Free book or her book would be a great place to start.
Well, I'll definitely link to those in the show notes for people. And then Also, if someone's struggling and they're in that frustration stage where they think I'm low carb, but now I feel cranky or I'm putting on weight and they play around for a few months and they're just getting so frustrated, they can actually even turn and talk to someone like yourself where they could actually take you on as a nutritional coach and bounce ideas off you, and you can help them.
Yes, absolutely. So I work with people one-on-one, and very much people who are really trying to work out the best sort of low-carb way for them. Like I said, I'm a huge fan on using it as a template and then building on from there, depending on what your goals are. So yeah, so I do one-on-one, so people can find me at lowcarbgenesis.com. And then I'm on that on all social media platforms, and I'm really happy to answer questions and help where I can as well. So please just reach out if anybody has a question. I'd love to try and help.
Yeah, well, again, I'm going to link to all your profiles in the show notes too, because I always, when I see questions like this, I love to help link people to the correct resources. It's especially in healthcare, there's such a myriad of information out there, but you know, just to take someone straight to this person and say, right, there you go, ask that question and unlock this issue, you know, so you can actually you can get to the solution at the end of the day. And I think I see it all the time. Again, that's why this whole show is mainly about ladies and low carb, because I feel this, it's a real problem area in this low carb high fat world, is particularly for females, and the frustration levels that so many women out there must be going through, thinking, I thought this was supposed to be good for me, and
just not working. I know, and that's the thing, it's definitely not just them. There's probably just lots of underlying things that are going on, unfortunately. So don't give up hope with it. It's just trying to really sort of navigate and dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for coming onto the show today and for sharing all your knowledge bombs. And if anyone wants to connect with Emily, I'm going to put all the information in the show notes on the website for her.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Great. Well, again, thank you so much, Emily. And take care.